You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. Welcome to your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every game, news item, rumor, and more. Thank you for subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or on Himalaya. My name is David Ramil. So I debated even whether or not I should do this podcast, to be honest with you. It's Monday night, the Heat coming off a three-day weekend where they celebrated the memory of Dwayne Wade, his impact in South Florida, and everything that he represented to this franchise and to this community. They faced the Cleveland Cavaliers on Saturday night, blew them out by a wide margin as they raised Dwayne's jersey to the rafters. Then they returned to Miami and traveled to Cleveland, rather, for a home-and-home set against those same Cavaliers, who would be welcoming back Kevin Love into the lineup he set out Saturday's game. And Miami looked like nothing mattered. Obviously, they've had their issues on the road. They've been a much better team at home. And against this Cavaliers team, that is a pretty bad bunch. And just having lost their head coach in his first year, he resigned midway through the season, actually right after the All-Star break. And this is the Cavaliers team that struggled in many different facets. Miami seemed like they had the game in command by a pretty wide margin. They actually entered the fourth quarter with a 19-point lead, and it seemed like Miami had the game fully in control. They were shooting very well. Everything seemed great, and it was going to be an easy victory even without Jimmy Butler, Myers Leonard, or Tyler Hero in the lineup. And then something happened, and I'm not sure what. The fourth quarter was a total collapse in every respect, offensively, defensively, even coaching strategy. On offense, no shot would fall. It seemed like both Cleveland's defense ratcheted up to another level, and Miami forgot what to do with the ball in their hands. Defensively, they were out of place. Bad matchups. One particular play that stood out was when Jay Crowder got caught in a switch with Derrick Jones Jr., and Crowder wound up taking over his defensive assignment and moving on to Kevin Porter Jr., and then they put up a bad shot. The rebound went back to Cleveland, and Crowder completely lost Kevin Porter Jr. in the shuffle, and then he wound up getting an easy dunk or layup at the basket to put Cleveland up even further. The bottom line being that a 19-point lead evaporated very quickly to a deficit, which Miami had to claw back in order to just achieve a tie game, force overtime, and then wound up losing by 5 points to the Cleveland Cavaliers. So this is not an easy podcast. One, it's very late. I'm still a little bit sick. I have a recent cold, and I'm trying to fight my way through. If you can tell my voice, I probably sound a little congested, and I apologize for that. But the reality is that this is a game that has all of Heat Twitter very close to the edge. They've unlocked the windows. They've walked onto the ledge, and right now they're hearing the crowd yell jump, 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 and debating whether or not they actually should, because this is, I think, for many of you and many Heat fans in general, probably a low point in the season. That 19-point lead going into the fourth quarter seemed unsurmountable, and going against a Cavaliers team that was not particularly good, clearly many of you, and I included, thought that Miami would cruise to an easy victory, and that was not the case. And so many of you were claiming that this is the worst loss of the season, that this is a low point in the year, that Miami is a much worse team than they've been all season. And I'm not sure that that's the case. I'll get into that in the next segment when I kind of talk about what this loss means as far as the season and everything else is concerned. As far as the loss itself, Jimmy Butler wasn't in the lineup. That's a huge deal. Obviously, even with Andre Iguodala and Jay Crowder contributing somewhat, Jimmy's presence was necessary there, particularly in the fourth quarter. Miami just seemed like they needed a bucket, could not get one, could not get anybody to go to the line. They wound up scoring only, I believe, 12 points total in the fourth quarter, outscored 31-12 in the fourth quarter by those same Cavaliers, and then 8 points total in overtime, giving up 14 points to the Cavs. So actually, it was a 6-point loss rather than a 5-point loss, excuse me. So with Jimmy there, clearly that would have been a very different matter. I mean, let's look at the fact that Miami was 8-0 in overtime games this season prior to this loss. without Jimmy there, they had no answer defensively or offensively. Couldn't find anybody to get the easy bucket. And I think that's the biggest takeaway from that is how much he makes this team better. Look, Bam Adebayo post-All-Star break has been pretty sensational, even though Miami has lost two of the three games in that stretch. He's been very, very good. He scored 22 points against the Cavs. One assist shy of a triple-double. I saw many people claiming that he was chasing the triple-double, and I don't see that from Bam. This is not Ricky Davis. This is not somebody who's going to put up a bad shot, collect a rebound so he can get that triple-double. I'm not sure where that's coming from. He may have forced some passes, and I'll give you that. If he was trying to get that assist, maybe, that had extra motivation there for him. But I don't think that was the full story here. I mean, there were a number of players making bad passes. Corin was making bad passes. Jay Crowder made bad passes. It seemed like a lot of Heat players kind of collapsed in that fourth quarter and were forcing the issue there. There was bad spacing all around. Nobody knew exactly what to do. The paint collapsed there. Nobody was getting to the rim very easily. And the Cavs defense did improve in that fourth quarter. So it was a combination of very bad offense from Miami and improved defense. I wouldn't go so far as to say good defense, but improved defense from the Cavaliers. So I don't think Bam deserves a lot of the criticism that he's getting. It was an overall team loss. Now, I will say that Goran Dragic has been getting a lot of criticism as well, and he did also make some mistakes. He had a turnover. He also committed a foul in the waning moments there where he pushed Larry Nance Jr. and seemed much more egregious, in real time, and the refs called a technical foul for it, even though Nance was clearly in his way, and Goran was just trying to get out of that way and push Nance aside. Not sure what happened. Nance cried to the ref, and he got the technical against Goran. That was a stupid call, and I can't believe that that was called, because quite honestly, it was very, very innocuous. Absolutely ridiculous. Goran made some mistakes, took some bad shots perhaps, but he also finished 7 of 16 for 22 points. I mean, offensively, he was as good as you could hope for. I'm not sure what the issue was there. I know maybe some of those three-point shots, including one towards the end of the game there, was not the best shot that Goran could have taken. Goran took a three-pointer trying to put this team into victory. Instead, the ball caromed off and fell into Kendrick Nunn's hands, and he wound up putting it back and tying the game that way. So it worked out pretty well. It was not the best shot, perhaps, but it's one that he's taken before, and I was comfortable with it, to be 100% honest with you. I think a lot of players just struggled overall. I don't think there was any one reason for it, and like I said before, there were some coaching decisions that weren't particularly good either. Eric Spoelstra took Kelly Olynyk out of the game. He had started in place of Myers Leonard, finished with 6 points on 15 minutes that he played, 2 of 5 from the floor, including 2 of 4 three-pointers. Now, he probably would have been a problem defensively, but Larry Nance Jr. seemed a little bit more motivated in that fourth quarter, and he was directly going at Duncan Robinson, just forcing his way to the basket, putting up a couple hook shots there, getting some easy looks at the rim. Nobody defensively really could contain Larry Nance, which, you know, says a lot about what Miami's defense was like in the fourth quarter. But, you know, there was a mismatch there, and they targeted it, and they exploited it pretty well. And that was a huge difference in the game. But you also have to give credit to their rookie, Kevin Porter Jr., somebody who Miami had been looking at as a potential draft choice this past year. He finished with 30 points in 41 minutes of play, 9 of 18 shooting, including 4 of 7 for three-point range. He was hitting shots that he has not been able to hit all year. He's been in and out from their G League affiliate. He has not been a consistent player for Cleveland. This was by far the best game of his season, and some of those shots that he was taking were very, very tough shots. He got some really contested looks at the rim, and he was still able to hit those. He has a good combination of athleticism, some shooting ability, and he's got the will. He a little bit of the Deion Waiters, willingness to take that shot in clutch moments, and he came up big for the Cavs. So it was a combination of many different factors there as far as the loss itself is concerned. Andre Iguodala was only 1 of 5 on his 17 minutes of play, finished with just 3 points. Defensively, he's just not there yet. Offensively, clearly, he's a problem for Miami. So he is still working his way into shape. And I'm sure he understands that even with the All-Star break, that might have been even more of a problem. I thought he looked good you know, against Cleveland on Saturday. I thought he was okay against Atlanta last week, and he did not look good against Cleveland on Monday night. So that's an issue there. So much went wrong for Miami here, but you know what? Somehow, I don't feel as bad about this loss as I do others this season, and I'll talk about that in the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat. So as I said before in the first segment, a lot of you were pretty despondent about this loss. I think there's something about the collapse there, the fact that Miami's offense just fell apart, their defense just couldn't respond. If they had managed to somehow score that three-pointer from Goran, if they had won by one, would this feel as bad that they had lost that 19-point lead and still managed to win the game? I'm not so sure. Like, I think I look at this game, and I'm not that upset about it. I'll be 100% honest with you. Something I tweeted about earlier today, and I was looking at the Wizards' loss and how bad that was. And I think that was by far the worst loss. Not only was that roster fully healthy, you had Jimmy Butler in that lineup. You had Myers Leonard in that lineup. You had Tyler Hero there. You had been winning a lot of basketball. You had not gone to double-digit losses all season. You were 24-8 prior to that game. So clearly one of the best teams in the league. You're feeling yourself after you just knocked off the Pacers and Sixers at home. And then you go into a Washington and you face a team without Bradley Beal, without John Wall, obviously, without even their first-round pick, Rui Hachimura. And you go up against Jan Mahimi and you give up a career high in points. You go up against Garrison Matthews and Jordan McRae and Ish Smith, guys that are hanging on to their NBA careers, and you give up career highs in points. That was by far a worse loss. You never had the lead. You never had any control in that game. You never had any kind of response whatsoever when you're fully healthy, when your leader, Jimmy Butler, is there, when you have a full roster of players there. To me, that was by far a much more egregious loss, because that just indicated a complete lack of anything. Like, there was no response there. There was no way of coming back from these guys that were all having career highs. And that was the beginning of signs that maybe Miami's defense was a little bit more difficult, that maybe their record might be a little bit of a mirage. And you've seen some more losses like that over the course of the season, obviously, since that point forward. They're now at 36-21. They're still with the fourth best record in the Eastern Conference. But that first loss to Washington, I think, was the very worst loss of the season. You could have pinpointed the loss a few games earlier to Memphis. That was kind of a wake-up call, as a lot of players said. That was the loss that led to that five-game win streak before the Wizards lost. But either way, I really think that this loss to Washington wasn't as bad because of the number of players that you have out, because of the fact that the three-point shot evens things out. Like, you had Kevin Love and Kevin Porter Jr. hitting shots in that fourth quarter that they have not been able to hit all game long. I look at this game and it's bad, no doubt. It's bad to give up that loss. It's bad to lose to a bad team. It's bad to give up that huge lead. But there are a number of factors there against Miami. They're on the road. I know it's maybe a convenient excuse there, but they are a worse team on the road than they are at home. That might be an understatement, but they gave up a huge lead to a Cavs team that's kind of trying to find their identity now as A.B. Bickerstaff takes over for John Beilein. And, you know, obviously they go through a coaching change. They didn't go through the typical coaching bump that a lot of teams go through. But this is a team with quality NBA players. You know, Kevin Love, Tristan Thompson, even guys like Nance and Porter Jr. can be contributors there. They have some young talent. This isn't as bad a team as that Washington was, that Washington team was. I also think it's indicative of the fact that Miami is maybe not as good. I know a lot of people thought I was being very negative earlier in the season when I looked at this roster and their the way that they had been winning and said, you know what, maybe this is still just a hot streak, and maybe this isn't indicative of a team that's a legitimate title contender. I know I took some criticism for questioning whether or not they were a legitimate title contender, and I think their record reflected that they were. They've had really, really good games, but maybe this is just more realistic. Maybe this is a version of this team that, you know, may not be able to advance past the first or second round. I mean, maybe not even past the first round. If they get to the second round, that would probably be a huge win for this unit, but I'm just not sure if this version of this team is as good as everybody might think they are. And they started off very hot, and since then, obviously, their defense has collapsed pretty well. They give up way too many three-pointers. Their zone defense is a weapon that they don't use very effectively all the time. They're incorporating new players. They've gone through a number of transitions here, and just they have not been able to respond the way that you'd expect this team to do so. And without Jimmy there, I think that changes things considerably. Now, it didn't matter on Saturday against Cleveland at home that they didn't have Jimmy Butler, but against Cavaliers on the road, it was a whole different story, and obviously they collapsed. So, I look at this loss, pretty demoralizing, and still not, I think, the worst loss of the season. I also think that because this team may not have been as good as we would have liked them to have been, as their record seemed to indicate that they were, it's also not that egregious a loss. I know that's a word I've used several times during this podcast, but it's not that. It doesn't seem like that bad a loss because of all that. And the fact is that I think Miami will find a way to respond to this. I think they... I'm not sure if I'm going to go ahead and say that this is a wake-up call, but they will find a way to respond to this. I'm not sure how. I'm not sure what it'll take. I'm not sure who steps up as a result. But that giving up that lead, I think, is going to be a huge point of contention for the guys on this team moving forward, because they got very, very comfortable. And Eric Spoelstra in particular does not want this team to get too comfortable. And they've relied on their shooting. They've relied on playing just enough defense to get enough wins. And they can't afford to cruise for the rest of the season, because they are pushing for home court advantage, because given their road record, they want to be a home, they want to be a team that plays at home and have home court advantage, at least in the first round of the playoffs. So I'm not sure that this team could advance to the second or third position in the Eastern Conference standings, but that's still a goal. They probably won't catch up to Boston or Toronto unless they have a huge streak. Now, Miami does play 5 games at home next. They play a number of games at home, so this is a good opportunity for them to make up some ground there and to just kind of work their way back into one of the top teams in the Eastern Conference standings, and hopefully they can carry that momentum going when they get everybody back and when everybody's healthy. Myers and Tyler are both without a walking boot on, so maybe they're making some progress. I still think it'll be a few games before they see any kind of action whatsoever, and we have no idea why Jimmy is away from the team. The only reason is listed as personal reasons, and so you give him his space and hope that everything's okay with him and his family, and as long as he's able to come back healthy and there's nothing wrong affecting him or his family, then you'd make do, because he is a human being who deserves a space, and I'm glad that we haven't dug too deep into that or looked for that as any kind of reason, although some people had the audacity to criticize a human being for taking some time away from work. He has not missed a lot of time this season. He has not missed a lot other than for the birth of his daughter. He hoped that everything's okay with her and her mother, and that Jimmy is fine. And you give him a space because he is a human being. So let's not levy any kind of criticism against Jimmy or anybody on the Heat, or for that matter. They played badly tonight. They move on. You follow this team for a reason. I don't think it's time to give up the ship just yet, and stay positive, because there's still a lot about this season to look forward to, and they can make some progress over the next few weeks. You know, there's still, it's not even March yet, and they've got a month and a half to tighten things up before the postseason, and given that Eric Spoelstra is going to be, well, he has enough experience to understand what it takes to achieve something in the postseason, you give him this kind of space. You give him the right to, you know, kind of tinker with this lineup and to see what works and what doesn't, because I think this is going to be a different version of the team that he's had all season long now that you have Iguodala and Crowder, et cetera. Anyway, I'll look ahead to the next game, answer some of your questions, and get into the stats of the game next. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Remember to listen to and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Locked On Heat on Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're on iTunes, please leave a rating and review, especially if it's a good one. But feel free to leave a bad one, too. I mean, be honest if you can. If you have some criticism or input, anything that you want to tell me, you can always do so via email or on iTunes. I love reading those reviews, and I appreciate you taking the time to submit them. You know, I was thinking about it even as I was going into this segment, and I'm not going to do the stat of the game. There was no point in it. I wasn't even sure whether or not I should do the pod. Numbers have shown that against in games where Miami loses, particularly when they lose as badly as they did tonight, not a lot of people want to listen to the podcast. It's not like a live radio segment where you can call in and complain. You can do so via Twitter, obviously, and I've seen a number of notifications this night as people keep getting in my mentions and talking about this being the worst loss of the season. And to be honest with you, I still disagree. I mean, as bad as that loss was, you know, maybe it's the impact of losing a huge lead, but I don't think it's as bad as what happened against the Wizards, and I'll maintain that for the rest of the season now. What happens next for Miami? Well, again, they do play the next five games at home. Those five games are not a cakewalk by any stretch of the imagination. They've got a game on Wednesday against the Minnesota Timberwolves that haven't won since November, it seems like, or they've won very infrequently since November. Then they have a game on Friday against the Dallas Mavericks, on Saturday, a home-and-home back-to-back set against Brooklyn, and then they face the Milwaukee Bucks on Monday, the first time facing the Bucks since a win earlier in the season against the Bucks. This is a very, very different version of that Milwaukee team, and a hell of a test, and you hope that Miami is fully healthy by then, because they'll need everybody playing at the highest level possible in order to even challenge this Bucks team, because they are very, very good. And then on Wednesday, you host the Orlando Magic, a team that's given Miami fits over in recent years. You wonder not, Aaron Gordon is going to have his revenge game against Derrick Jones Jr. following the loss of the slam dunk contest. As laughable as that sounds, it's a possibility with Aaron, you never know. And then Miami travels to New Orleans and Washington. Ooh, again, the Wizards, who have Bradley Beal back in the lineup at that point. And that should be interesting. The New Orleans Pelicans playing well with Zion Williamson, making a hell of a case for Rookie of the Year, before you come back to Miami and face the Charlotte Hornets, New York Knicks, Chicago Bulls. So, 8 of the next 10 games at home. Miami has proven to be a very, very good team at home. Hopefully that's enough to right the ship. You hope that enough of the players that are injured and out will come back and segue immediately and seamlessly back into the team, so that there won't be any kind of issues whatsoever. And if that's the case, then Miami may not have enough to worry about. Like, Philadelphia is going to be without Ben Simmons for a while. They came back tonight. Joel Embiid had a monster night. You know he's going to be taking up most of the scoring load. And the Sixers are a team that can rely on either Ben Simmons or Joel Embiid. The problem has been relying on both of them, because their skill sets don't necessarily mesh particularly well. But now that Simmons is out, you can go to Embiid and see what kind of leader he is statistically, whether or not he's able to carry that team. They're challenging Miami for that fourth seed in the Eastern Conference. Indiana has struggled trying to incorporate Victor Oladipo. They've had a number of players struggle. Malcolm Brogdon has not been as good as he was earlier in the season. So Miami just has to do just enough to hold on to the fourth seed. Now, you'd like for them to be playing very, very well and at least challenge for the third seed. Right now, that does not seem particularly likely. The Celtics are 4.5 games up on Miami right now, 9.5 games back of the Milwaukee Bucks. Doesn't seem like anybody's going to chase Milwaukee unless they collapse completely. Toronto's 7 games back of Milwaukee, and they've been playing phenomenally well. They've won, you know, 9 of their last 10 games. They were on that, I think, 16-game winning streak. They lost one. They've won 2 since then. So they're back to, you know, being a contending team somehow, even without Kawhi Leonard. But Miami has their work cut out for them. They have to do a lot of soul-searching and tightening in order to become a legitimate playoff contender. Because I still think this team is a bit away from title contention, even with the roster as currently constructed. They have a lot of talent. You hope that if they get everybody to play at their best, maybe they could push a team like Milwaukee. I don't know that they have enough to knock off Milwaukee. And that's assuming they can get past either Toronto or Boston in the playoffs. But as far as the next few games are concerned, you come back home, you figure it out, you get everybody back as soon as you can, and you do what you can to withstand the challenges of these really good playoff teams that you're going to be hosting at home, from Orlando and Brooklyn, who are, you know, both lower-rung teams as far as the Eastern Conference are concerned. But they're challenging for a playoff spot. You can't take them lightly. You have to play Dallas, that's, you know, out in the brutal West trying to compete for a top four seed. They're currently 7th in the standings, but they're only a few games back of the fourth seed Houston Rockets, so every game is important for them. And of course, you've got the Bucks. You want to make a statement game against them. You want to know whether or not you have what it takes to challenge them. And you're missing, you know, you're without James Johnson, who would have taken up the challenge of defending Giannis Antetokounmpo. You're without Justice Winslow, who would have done a very good job of that too. And you hope that Crowder and Iguodala can do something in that regard, but you've never seen what they're like on this lineup going up against a guy like Antetokounmpo. So that's going to be a heck of a challenge for them, and one worth watching. So as far as Miami's concerned, they've got a lot to do. It's not the end of the road here. It's not the end of the season. There's no reason for doom and gloom. It might not be great right now, but it's probably more indicative of what this team is really like. They're capable of really, really good wins and some really bad losses along the way. Perhaps that kind of even-keeled approach isn't what you were looking for, and I apologize. I could be much more pessimistic if I need to be, but I think of it as just being more realistic than anything else. That's it for tonight, though, because this loss kind of has taken some out of me. I don't feel depressed about it, as a lot of you people do, but that doesn't necessarily mean I am happy or overjoyed to be recording a podcast this late after following a 20-point loss like that, or what was basically a loss of 20 points after they gave up that huge lead in the fourth quarter. So check in with me tomorrow when I'll probably be answering a mailbag, and then, of course, on Wednesday, when Miami comes back to host the Minnesota Timberwolves. You can connect with me on Twitter using the hashtag AskLHeat or email me at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. I'm David Vermil, signing off and thanking you as always for your support. Yeah!
Wrap it up,
Dean.
Oh.